Hello and welcome to a brand new feature special episode, bonus content, the whole bells and whistles of Invasion of the Podcasters, where this episode Simon has managed to bag an interview with an interesting young Northeast filmmaker, and we're also going to run down our list of best mockumentaries and found footage films. So as always with each episode, you've got myself, Graham, we've also got Scott.
Hi guys, Scott here.
And we've also got Simon.
Hello guys, Simon here.
So Simon, I'm just going to hand over to you. So if you want to give us a little introduction to your interview, and then we'll get it played.
Yeah, I think I will just play the interview actually, because I kind of like explain it there, what this is all about. But I should say that we originally intended to do this as part of episode 28, but then we were like, so that's why I say episode 28 in the intro to this, which I recorded 11 days ago. So it might be a little disorientating, but you'll get acclimatized, don't worry.
And when we recorded episode 28 just earlier, we did go on a bit longer than anticipated, so it was never going to fit within one episode either.
No, it would be a maybe 2.5 hour special, who knows? But who has time for that? Okay, so I'm going to roll the tape. Here we go. Click. Hello, guys. Welcome to the middle part of episode 28 of Invasion of the Podcasters. This is, in effect, a mini-episode within a regular episode because we have a special guest interview for you all. Today, I'm talking with an emerging filmmaker in the northeast of England. He's a friend and collaborator of mine and a very sound guy because he works in sound. Get it? His name is Jack Abernethy. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm good. You could not resist that joke, couldn't you?
I couldn't, no.
It's just Murphy's Law by this point, isn't it?
It is. But I've never used it on the podcast, so...
That's true, yeah.
You know, it's new ground.
Yeah, new ground. Yeah, man, I'm very good. Thanks for having us. How are you doing?
All right, I'm good. Thank you, man. We're having you on the show today as part of a wider discussion about mock documentaries and found footage movies and which ones are good and which ones aren't. But that's fantastic because you've actually made a short one of these movies. It's called Truth. And that's all I'm going to say because I know it's a passion project of yours and I think I'd be doing the thing a disservice if I tried to find what it is. So you tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, no worries. Appreciate it. So Truth is a short fictional documentary that's centered around a criminal incident that happens in the late 1978. And it's centered around this, this sort of theatre, this variety theatre, about all local performers, magicians, singers, dancers, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. Something very, very terrible happens there in 1978, mm-hmm. and has a massive, massive knock-on effect, which we fast forward to where the documentary or where the official document takes place. And we have one character who was seriously affected by the incident and what happened there. And a big effect on her and her life, and she's trying to sort of have some sort of resolve from it, find out what happened, and maybe trying to kind of put it behind her. To which we also meet another character in there who knows a bit more about it, and we get lots of sort of juicy little secrets and things like that. So very mysterious, very lore heavy.
You ended up writing a 30-page document backstory about
the original one was about sort of 30 pages, quite sort of ridiculous and a bit intimidating to put that online, so mm-hmm. I eventually sort of repurposed it into something a bit more consumable, which even then I still think like 10 massive pages of text every day is a bit much. But
well, no, it builds hype and mystery, like you were saying.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it's good to have something for, and this is one of the things I kind of stressed on when making it, it's good to have something for everyone. So the film is on its own entity, it's its own sort of thing, and everyone can kind of look at it, enjoy it, not enjoy it, or take something from it. Mm-hmm. But then for the people who maybe want a bit more from it, maybe they, I kind of want to find out what happens with this character, or, oh, what do they mean by this? You know, there's more context, there's more stuff to dive into. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just about satisfying those bookworms, I guess, who like a bit of that, a bit of that stuff. And it's all kind of purposed in a way to make it kind of sort of fun and a bit more interactive and engaging than your typical mm-hmm. sort of thing, which I think is like, a nice sort of quality that fictional documentaries can dive into and kind of explore a bit more than your traditional sort of.
Yeah, I mean, I particularly like it when mock documentaries start having fun with their world, you know?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's not just the film. It's little extra bits of multimedia stuff that you see around you. Like, I always think of this as Spinal Tap, for example, where they released like a full sort of album of hits that you would have in the movie, plus some of the songs as well.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
It's just engaging. It's like it adds, I think what I try to do with Truth is have that sort of fictional kind of story, but then have it like sort of bleed into like reality a little bit. Mm. So there's stuff that alludes to that in the film itself. So there's archival footage of a big theme of the film is like automata and clockwork and all that. So there's some found footage that kind of dives into a bit more of that, a bit more behind the character who's sort of interested in that sort of field. So it's kind of bringing that sort of back to sort of reality.
Mm-hmm. And then there's so it's actual footage that somebody else has filmed back in the day, or is it?
Yeah, it's so it's called, the actual thing that alludes to was called The Writer, which is mm-hmm. an automaton from the 18th or 17th century, I forget which one. But mm-hmm. it's very, very old, it's about 200, 300 years old. And it's footage of someone filming that, I think around sort of late 2000s, mm-hmm. In the place where it's housed at, which is the Museum of Art and History in Switzerland. So I got in touch with them and asked, hey, can we use this footage for the film? And they were very, really cool about it. Massive thanks to the individuals who lent us that footage for Truth, which massive, massive appreciated.
Lovely. So you were talking about automatons and stuff, and I know that you have been interested in this sort of thing for a little while. Was it that drew you to make the film, or was it the genre itself of the mock documentary that you wanted to explore?
A bit of everything. Like, I think the whole kind of theme around automatons, like they're quite, you know, obviously to any old audience, they're quite sort of creepy and quite have that little aesthetic to them that's quite appealing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I made, you know, really good sort of horror films that look at like Dead Silence. You know, that's
that kind
of puppeteer ventriloquist sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was an inspiration as well. Another one was one of the first Derren Brown shows I watched called mm-hmm. Svengali, which was actually a kind of big inspiration behind the sort of lore story behind it. I think that was a kind of a fictional story as well that he made up. He might have made up mm-hmm. to sort of fool the crowd a bit. I don't know.
Just depends what you think is magic and what isn't.
True. Very true. And yeah, what was the other part of the question? The mock doc.
Yeah, just like what drew you to that?
So yeah, the first sort of mock doc that I watched was, it featured on the Discovery Channel and it was called Mermaids the Body Found. So it was a bit different, and I think that's the first mock doc I watched that wasn't really a typical mock doc, like, oh, it's a bit funny, it's a bit comedy and a bit jokey sort of thing. Like, it definitely took itself seriously, and it was kind of, it was divided up quite nicely. So it had like the fictional story, the kind of the drama, the base layer of the film, which you can kind of take or sort of leave. But then under that, and the thing that like I found was really, really sort of smart about it was like the real science. So essentially the sort of plot of this is the National Oceanic and Aquatic Administration, they found evidence of an aquatic ape. And the Navy saw this, they were trying to sort of cover it up because if this was ever found by the public, there would be a massive, massive uproar. And the film kind of explored, it was basically a big what if. What if there were like aquatic apes that were kind of like us, but maybe they were a part of the human evolution that decided to live and adapt in the water. And
it's so very Aquaman. I like it already.
Very, very Aquaman. And the animations, like, it has some very, very well done animations that really kind of bring the whole story to life and stuff. And it isn't just a big what if. It's also a how this could happen and what are the consequences of this happening, which is quite, you know, for like a little mockumentary on the Discovery Channel to kind of have that much sort of weight to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting. And the funny thing is, like, that sort of part of it, what I described, it wasn't like really sort of picked up, like, and it got into quite a bit of, like, a controversy because a lot of people actually believed
it. Well, it's on the Discovery Channel, isn't it?
Yeah. And
you go there to be educated. You don't go there to be fooled.
Yeah, exactly. But it is quite educational, but just not just in a very subtle way, which I thought was just sort of genius.
By dealing with some sort of fantasy lore, I guess.
Yeah.
it tells you a lot about our world and the world beyond, I guess.
And having like real world implications of, you know, how could they exist? Like where have they been going? How much of the water have we not explored? Mm-hmm. And if they do exist, what's the consequences of that? And how does it, how do they reflect on humanity and all that?
So remind me of the name?
Mermaids, The Body Found. There was a sequel to that, which wasn't as impressive. It was a bit more of an expansion into the fictional story in like a talk show kind of way, they were presenting new evidence to support it. But yeah, the actual original documentary was just so fascinating. That's what sort of drew me to the mock doc, was something that kind of took itself seriously. It had that drama that you could escape to and kind of, right, what world are we going to? Let's go there. But then also that kind of that real world side of it and that real... You know, that real part of it that was like had consequence and that took everything in that story and put it back into reality that you could then question in a real way. I thought was an interesting concept that I wanted to explore a bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's what sort of drew me to it.
But in your own world of sort of gothic automata.
Yes, and, the mysterious law. But yeah, I think that's, yeah, like I was saying before, like that's a more, like the mermaids one, it's a more, it kind of divided thing that kind of draws into the real science and the real sort of history and lore behind it. And whereas Truth is something, it's more of a fictional story, but it starts to kind of bleed into reality, into kind of a bit of a creepy, but hopefully engaging with sort of way.
Well, it also sort of deals with, at least from, you know, when I was, well, I was literally watching it from the sidelines because I was a PA on that film.
You were indeed. Also had a bit of a scene in there as
I did, yes. Yes, you cut my improv about my octopus story. For shame. Yeah, bits of it reminded me of Kill List in a way. So something like, you know, British folk horror. There's sort of elements of that bleeding in from the sidelines as well, other than this, you know, quite gothic element that you've brought in there as well. So I think it's a multi-generic little piece that you've put together, and it's quite impressive in its own way.
Oh, thank you, yeah. It's quite it was definitely quite experimental and maybe in some ways a bit ambitious.
Right.
I guess kind of going into like how we sort of like filmed it. I knew I wanted to shoot it like a documentary, and that in itself kind of provided some sort of some challenges, because obviously we're all working with this thing that is a story and is a script and is something that needs to happen in a particular order so we could tell that story and have that pacing throughout. But it also needs to look and behave like it's a documentary, so have those big elements like the interviews, the archival footage, the images that shows you a bit more of the story from the past that the characters in the film are referencing and talking about. And I know a lot of it was going to take place in the edit. So once we had all those elements, we could then kind of put them all together and see how everything sort of draws together. And I had a pretty good image of what it was going to be, but I think definitely some of the scenes was quite sort of challenging to film from a directional sort of point of view. I mean, it's not easy for any sort of actor to take, like, okay, who is this character? Who do I need to be? But then it needs to be, like, this needs to be real. Mm-hmm. And obviously the characters are kind of embracing these characters, becoming them, but also in a kind of a realist sense. So it's...
There's a lot of baggage for all of those characters as well, like on screen. There's lots so of backstory and, yeah.
And there's lots of stuff going on and like with everything. And I think definitely the whole thing has been a pretty cool like learning experience. For instance, like you have found footage, which is totally realistic. What you are watching is a real event. Then you have more sort of like stylistic pieces, a bit like the sort of Mermaid Doc, but maybe a bit more kind of cinematic. And I think Truth is kind of like in a sort of like no man's land in the middle. So it's kind of... maybe it's not entirely certain what it sort of needs to be or wants to be, but as long
but
as it
also
kind of produces
credit to
that,
you for bridging that gap, you know.
It's, yeah, you know,
it's not an easy thing.
It's, you know, it's experimental. It's sort of all right, like what if we do this, what about this happens? And yeah, it wasn't sort of all smooth run-ins, and I don't think anything is. Definitely some stuff I would like look back and critique, because I think it's important just to, like, whenever you're doing anything, to kind of ruthlessly sort of evaluate the things that you make. So, you know, you can improve on that in the future, because we're all sort of passionate in this little circle of filmmaking here.
Yeah,
but absolutely. But yeah, I was happy with the sort of the way it turned out and how some people reacted to it.
And how festivals have reacted to it, because it is doing the festival circuit right now.
It is indeed. I think we've gotten to about three festivals so far.
Nice.
So we did a couple of the Liftoff festivals. We were at the Sessions. And we got into Manchester as well, the Manchester Liftoff Festival. Yeah, got into forgotten the name of this one, but
I'll be sure to share the poster on social media, yeah, just so we've got the laurels and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely do that. But yeah, we've got into a few festivals. We've kind of got the film seat, and that's all I really wanted. I just wanted to have more people to just see the film, see what they think mm-hmm. of it. If they like it, mm-hmm. great. If not, that's fine. You know,
fair play. So, do we know when it's coming up next? Have all those festivals already happened? Or
so some of the, I think Manchester Liftoff has just finished. So mm-hmm. apologies, missed your chance. We do have some festivals that are coming up. I think there's one in June. I think Brussels is in June.
Whoa, we got in Brussels. The Brussels International Show.
We're waiting to hear back from Brussels. You know, we haven't got in there just yet. And then we have another in December sometime. So I think we hear back from a couple of them, and then maybe I'll throw it up online somewhere again.
Well, fingers crossed.
Thank you.
Because if it goes international, fantastic. What are some of your favourite found footage / mock documentary movies? Because we're going to do our roundups in the episode itself. I'm recording this interview on 9th of April, so I doubt we'll record it, like the episode itself, for a little while now, so I still haven't decided on mine. So I won't be able to contribute much. What are yours?
So some of mine, the earliest one I remember watching was called Incident in Lake County, which was based on, it was kind of like a remake of something called the McPherson Tape, which was a small American family living out in the lakeside who get abducted by aliens.
All right.
And interestingly, so Incident Lake County came out 1 year before Blair Witch, which I didn't actually know at the time. And it's very good. Like obviously everyone knows Blair Witch, everyone knows how like sort of revolutionary it was. But this one kind of had some really interesting moments. Like you really got to know the family, the people there, the characters, who they sort of were, and also perspective as well. There are times in this where the character holding the camera is in one area, and then, not to sort of give away too much, but there are times where some characters kind of split away and things sort of unfold. And that's what's kind of really great about the fan footage genre, is something's happening elsewhere, we've got no idea what, but we mm-hmm. know, like, we just know this isn't good, sort of thing.
It's that arbitrary perspective, isn't it? Just it is, yeah. So much more tension in a way.
Absolutely. And it also features one of the best scares in found footage, like, ever, in the sense that it's kind of like a blink and you'll miss it sort of thing. It's so incredibly subtle, but it's so terrifying because nobody's aware of it. But yeah, that's...
I will keep my eyes peeled.
Certainly do. Watch the windows. And that, like, I watched that when I was really, really young, and I didn't know what found footage is sort of really were. Again, I generally thought that was real, and that wasn't mm-hmm. like a film at all. Yeah, so that.
So your parents had to sit you down and just go, look, Jack, it's okay.
Literally as well. And yeah, because there was I won't spoil that, but there's certain parts of the film where my mum had to sit me down and go, look, that's not really what happens, okay? not the aliens bit, there was something else in the film, but...
It weaved its spell on you. Yeah.
And there was another one more recently. This one I liked much, much more because of... It included lore and mythology and folklore and all that sort of stuff. I think I talked to you about it. It was called Hell House LLC.
Oh, yes. I still haven't watched it.
It's very, very good.
Since it's on... since we're on a streaming podcast right now, it's on Amazon Prime?
It is indeed on Amazon
Prime.
Nice.
Okay, so
they also released the director's cut not too long ago, which features a bit more sort of juicy details.
Right.
So I think if you watch, I would personally watch the main version before the director's cut.
Mm-hmm. So is it let's call it the theatrical, say the original cut.
The release.
Is that on, that's on Amazon Prime?
That is on Amazon Prime.
Director's one.
I think the director's one might be on a different platform.
Right. Like a Blu-ray special edition or something.
Must be. But definitely the release version, it has so much sort of mystery kind of about it. My sort of favorite thing about like found footage is not just the technical kind of immersion that it immediately just sort of misses into you. So like normal films, I think like characters are like what invest you, they're what immerse you. And it's great when found footage also has really great characters that you can immerse with and relate to. But also in this kind of shaky camera, like tinny sound, mm-hmm. kind of realm that it pulls you into. And the locations in the home as well are just brilliant. It sort of takes place in a real haunted house location that you can actually go to.
Oh, right. In reality, it's not just generally part of the lore of the movie, right?
So yeah, that was amazing. And the owner said Haunted House actually works on the film as a production designer, I believe.
Nice.
So it's a nice little touch.
He literally did design everything in the house down to the wallpaper and
yeah, like all the set dresses and the things like that. But yeah, very good film. Quite spooky, quite scary. Very sort of original scares. They're quite sort of subtle. I think I would say, in my opinion, towards the later stages of it, it does fall a little bit into the kind of traditional sort of horror tropes of jump scares, mm-hmm. things.
Quiet bang, as Mark.
Thing. But yeah, I think overall it's really, really original ideas.
Nice.
Cool stuff. And it's part of a mm-hmm. trilogy as well.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So even if the first film doesn't quite satisfy the sort of the lore and the bookworms, the next two films, because there are two more, definitely will kind of dive more into the mythology behind the characters, the story. And I believe there's also some digital content that they're also doing on the Facebook page called the Abaddon Tapes, which are like sort of animated like concepts that they're sort of diving into.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're interested in the Hell House LLC cinematic universe...
Yeah, definitely.
Go to the Facebook page. Nice. If you do get to see Truth through any of the methods that we've just mentioned or when Jack puts it online, send us a message and we'll feature it on the show to spread the word that little bit further. Thank you for coming on board to talk with us today, Jack. It's been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully it's not too long before we can have this sort of discussion over a pint. That would be
absolutely
nice,
yes. Stick with the digital pints for now, but
yeah,
definitely. Well, no, thank you very much for having us on. Really nice to talk to you.
Likewise, thank you very much. Lovely, thank you so much, Jack. This is the sort of thing that we want to do more often. We did it in the past with a short film called She Lives Alone with the filmmakers at Candle and Bell. We just did it with Truth. If you have a film that you would like promoted through us, then please do get in touch and we will happily talk to you and discuss it with you. Guys, what do you think of The Sound of Truth? Quite intriguing, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've all sort of got on board with its feature episode of looking into found footage and mockumentary films, and it sounds as if Jack's really inspired by a lot of the sort of stuff that he's mentioned there. So really looking forward to getting this link that he hopefully can provide so we can get it watched.
I'll get a private one, don't worry.
Yeah, certainly piqued my interest. Seems like a very original concept, I think, which mm-hmm. I think is hugely important if you're trying to craft a career in film, obviously. You have a unique selling point, and I think Jack certainly does with this film, and certainly it's hugely important that we champion British filmmakers, certainly those who are up and coming, because there's some massive talent in this country. Creatively, and it certainly seems like Chuck is one of them by this very intriguing concept.
And plus, as a little bonus, I'm sure you heard in that interview there, but I am actually in the movie playing a support group attendee. I did about 10 minutes of improv just talking about all my made up traumas and stuff.
When did you film it?
November, December 2019, so before COVID kicked off.
Yeah.
But yeah, we filmed it in a community centre in Denton. So that was that bit. And then we also went to, oh gosh, was it Long Benton? And then we filmed in a kind of old working men's club there, which is a fascinating location. You'll see it in the film. It's very atmospheric. But yeah, all good stuff. And I hope you guys get to see it too.
Fantastic. We look forward to it.
I would also like to say that Jack also had a little message that he wanted me to tag onto the interview. So, Jack, back to you for a moment.
So, yeah, overall, it was a really fun project. Had such a good time working on it. And massive, massive thank you to all the amazing cast and crew, all the actors, Rachel Stockdale, William Scott Johnson, Hayley Corney. Absolute killer actors. Massive props to them. And, of course, massive thanks to all the amazing crew we had on board with us. Super appreciate every bit of work they put into it. So massive thanks to them.
And thank you too, sir. Jack also asked me to say that Travel Planet group and a YouTuber called Paula Mommy were the folks who let him use the archive footage. So in the interest of thanking everybody who was involved in the film and giving credit where credit is due, thanks again to Travel Planet and Paula Mommy for their help in Truth.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for that, Simon. That's been a great addition. So we look forward to future interviews as well that we can rustle up. But also the other side of this special episode is us going into our favourite mockumentaries and found footage films. We've been asking you guys from episode 27 through our social media channels to put forward your recommendations. So first off, we'll go over to Scott if you've got the list of what people have been contributing. So over to you.
Thanks, Graham. I must admit that my viewership of mockumentaries and found footage films is very, very limited. I can't really create a list of even five.
You have, though. You've that's a solid list that you put together. You'll get to see it soon, but you know.
So
it was just a sort of yeah nod. Yeah.
Okay. So sure. I'm going to read out the correspondence from our beautiful, handsome listeners. I'm sure you all are, no doubt. We have Jack, who simply says wreck in capital letters, exclamation mark. Very, very enthusiastic there. That's the kind of enthusiasm we want this podcast.
all the exclamation marks.
And from Daniel, what we do in the shadows. That's right. Thank you, sir. Which counts as a mockumentary, doesn't it? He says, yes, it does. It is very much absolutely a mockumentary. That is one I've seen, by the way, folks.
That's one of the top five.
That film is a Halloween tradition. Watch it every year. Very good. For found footage, Daniel says, I've got a lot of time for Cloverfield. That first trailer was captivating, and it was the early days of viral marketing. The super cryptic build-up really hooked me in. I knew nothing about the film going in, so it was a proper thrill ride, even if it doesn't hold up to rewatches. Again, I've seen Cloverfield, but only once many years ago.
I actually like it more as I get older, weirdly enough. I used to hate it because I used to be get very, very motion sick with that sort of thing. So I struggled through Cloverfield first time, but I watched it again when I was like 19 or 20, and then I just loved it, you know? So maybe that's just me getting more in touch with my own body. I don't know.
And then Brian has two...
Lots of suspicious blinking from Scott there.
Okay. Moving on. Brian says, Troll Hunter. Yes, I've seen that. Very good. And he also mentions Cloverfield. So both Daniel and Brian in agreement there on Cloverfield. We have Sean who says, Chronicle. Gentlemen, are you aware of this?
Oh, yeah.
Graham is. I haven't seen it yet.
It's in my top five list. It's Josh Trank, who we mentioned in the last episode of Fantastic Four. I'll cover it more in when I come to my list, but yeah, really good, highly recommended.
I take it Chronicle's better than Fantastic Four, then.
By leaps and
somewhat,
bounds.
Somewhat,
yeah.
Somewhat.
There's a lot of people that would say that Chronicle is his only good film, but Capone is currently on Netflix with Tom Hardy, and I think that's quite an interesting film, actually. People aren't giving it a lot of credit, but it's interesting. It's not brilliant, but it's interesting.
I don't think you've got a lot of it. You'll have a lot of support with that argument by the sounds of it. Not that I've seen it, to be fair.
A good amount of people, I'm sure.
We then have Kevin, who says has to be Lake Mungo. Again, not one I've heard of, gentlemen.
Yeah, Second Sight are releasing it soon.
Like an Australian one.
Yeah. Australian found footage, really chilling, apparently, like subliminally horrifying kind of murder mystery found footage thing. Has a very intimidating reputation, so yeah, I think it's one that you have to approach with caution, but yeah, very good shout.
We have George here, who has a number of suggestions for us here. We have, again, What We Do in the Shadows. He says OBS, which Graham is internet speak for, obviously.
You just give a thumbs up there, listeners. So
thanks for you kids interpreting this lingo for me.
He also points out a TV series here in Parks and Recreation, which haven't yet checked out. We've got Borat, Troll Hunter, again, Team Thor. And then he says, could be the interview part of When Harry Met Sally. Fair enough. And Woody Allen films. Let's move on from him. Also, 2 weeks ago, a stop-motion documentary short with Taika Waititi and Ricky Gervais, I mean, there we go, just watch it for that, called Save Ralph was released. Well, it's more of a doc campaign ad.
I'll be checking that out. I've heard it's quite good.
Peter, finally someone mentions this is Spinal Tap. Took a few goes there. I haven't seen that, shamefully. That's on the list of shame with School
you
of Rock.
You would love it.
Which I mentioned in the last episode. I love it. Okay.
You will.
We have MaxiBot, which I'm assuming is not this person's real name. Probably trying to handle.
No, it's... Yeah. You know where.
what we do in the shadows. Yes.
Hey.
It's one of our go-to comfort films. Some people might not call it a comfort film, but I would agree with you there, MaxiBot. Absolutely. We have Jack, who says, Drop Dead Gorgeous, so ahead of its time and definitely not appreciated for the comic genius it truly is. And then we have Unnamed Fudge Fest, which I'm assuming is a festival and not a person. Haha. they say, Descent into Darkness, My European Nightmare is great.
Never heard of that one, but I'll take the recommendation.
Absolutely. And we have the team behind Mock and Roll commenting on Instagram saying Spinal Tap is definitely the best in the genre, which I'm assuming is the consensus. And we are humbled to be a lower budget indie that has been compared to it with favourable reviews.
Ooh.
Well, if you've been compared to that, Mock and Roll, I will be checking yourselves out. I must say thank you very much, listeners. We do really appreciate correspondence like this. This is all great stuff for us. We are hugely grateful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Yeah, thank you. So now it's our turn. So I know that we discussed this. I mean, I picked up on the fact that I thought we started off with doing it purely found footage, and then you then corrected it, Simon, by saying, oh, no, it's mockumentaries. So I've been a bit of a pedant and done two lists.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, I've kind of done a blend. So, yeah. And I think Scott has done a blend as well. So I think, you know, we're not going to come to fisticuffs over any sort of technicalities or whatever, because I think by definition, mockumentary is a format that's designed to be played with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can tick a lot of different boxes, and all I think it has to do is be something that passes itself off as real, but isn't.
True. I mean,
is that agreed?
I definitely agree. I mean, I think I've found that within the two categories, found footage firmly sits within horror sci-fi, mockumentaries firmly sits within comedy. So
yeah,
the two formats are used for the two genres very well. So if it's all right, I'll run through my list. So starting off with my found footage top five, from the top is Troll Hunter. Just a real surprise. Every now and again, everyone thinks that the found footage genre is going stale, and then you get something that comes along that just does something new with the genre or brings something really sort of inventive to it. So Troll Hunter up there, number one. The one that probably sparked it all off, not the original, but the one that really sort of hit upon the genre and really sort of it snowballed from 1999 is The Blair Witch Project. I haven't seen it. It's long overdue since I last saw it. So it's both on TV coming up on the 30th of April on BBC One. It's also available on iPlayer as well. So I'll make sure to watch that to have a recap. Third on my list is Chronicle. Now, you guys both said that you haven't seen it yet. Is that right?
No, I missed out on it at the time. It was one of the things that I did want to see when it came out, because I would have been in high school, so I would have, you know, it was right up my alley. But I've somehow missed it.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. Dane DeHaan, his name?
Michael B. Jordan?
Michael B. Jordan. I can't remember, there's a third guy in it as well, but I'm not sure what he's gone on to do. But basically, it's about these three sort of high school friends who they find like a meteorite which has fallen to Earth, and they go down to investigate in this sort of mine shaft thing that it's sort of worked its way into, and they all get to develop superpowers, and gradually as they develop their powers, it also sort of causes Dane DeHaan's character to go slightly unstable. He's the one who was kind of bullied amongst the group, from not by the other two friends but within school, and he gets slightly unhinged. So it starts off as a kind of like a superhero origin story, but all done found footage because they've got camcorders, and as they their powers develop. The camcorder is actually being controlled by their mind, so it's not being operated by someone. It's them just recording what they're getting up to with their powers by controlling the camera.
That's nice.
Psychokinetically. So yeah. Really clever technique. But the one thing I would say about it, the film goes from like a superhero origin story to suddenly it turns to Akira at the end.
Whoa!
It's nice. I mean, I wouldn't, it's not quite Akira, but I would say it's the closest thing I can describe to a live action version of Akira, where Dave DeHaan's character just goes mental. And
I think you said the first time it's Dane DeHaan, isn't it?
Dane DeHaan, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm getting Dave DeHaan from Depeche Mode mixed in there. You know what I'm like with names. But yeah, his character becomes more unstable, but he quickly develops the out of the three of them the strongest powers. So yeah, prepare yourselves for a thrill ride towards the end. Really well nice. Worth checking out.
I might have to check this out soon.
Seems like an easy watch. As well, obviously it was directed by Josh Trank, so yeah, we've covered that with the previous episode, yeah, yeah. But it's just such a shame that Fox just completely railroaded Fantastic Four. Then next on my list, I've got the Spanish horror Wreck, which is a found footage film of a camera crew and a newscaster who follow a fire department who go into a burning building just to be upstaged by a horde of zombies. It's really well done. The night vision shots as well are terrifying. There's been sequels, there's been remakes, but the original and best with Rep. And then fifth on my list, Cloverfield. I like the comments from our listener about the original marketing campaign. The first trailer for Cloverfield just came out of nowhere when the Statue of Liberty's head gets thrown down a street and just rolls down, and you just see the camera tilt and fall to its side. It was phenomenal. The film, I haven't watched it in a long while actually, but it gave us Matt Reeves, the director, who's obviously gone on to do the great Planet of the Apes sequels, and now The Batman as well. So I think Cloverfield is just a great film, but yeah, I do definitely want to get that rewatched. Moving over to my list of mockumentaries, so this is certainly more on a comedy tip. Number one, top of the list, and should be top of everyone's, this is Spinal Tap. Quintessentially the best mockumentary ever made. I think with just the realisation of the characters, it's just flawless. You've seriously got to watch it.
It's very much on my list.
Soundtrack over and over and over again. I will lend you the soundtrack and I will lend you the DVD because it's hilarious. All of it's brilliant.
Yeah. It's good to know a bit of kind of like 70s rock kind of folklore, because there are rock bands who've watched Spinal Tap and they say that, yeah, that's basically what it's like. So well worth it. Then second on my list is What We Do in the Shadows. Just a hilarious film which has gone on to spawn a fantastic TV series, and then the spin-off series with Wellington Paranormal. Now this is where it then becomes very Christopher Guest in my list. I've then got Best in Show, which is the mockumentary sort of the dog show pageants. I'm beside myself with laughter. It's so funny, and a lot of Christopher Guest stuff as well. It's the outline of the story is there. He does it kind of quite similar to Larry David, where there's a lot of improv. They just work on the outline of the story. There'll be little elements that they have to hit, but it's just a brilliant ensemble cast that he regularly has in these films, just improvising and just coming up with some brilliant moments. Next on that as well is followed up by number four is A Mighty Wind, the next Christopher Guest one, where this was to do with a folk festival, a group of folk singers and preparing for like a festival. The songs are fantastic, not quite on a par with This is Spinal Tap, but well worth seeing. Fifth on my list. Now this might have came higher if I'd seen it recently. It's been a long while since I've seen it, but doing some research, I watched a few trailers and clips online. Is The Ruttles All You Need Is Cash, which is a parody of the Beatles. Eric Idle involved, so it's a very sort of Monty Python kind of version of what the Beatles were like, and it just basically covers the history of the Beatles but parodied as the Prefab Four. So well worth watching. It's really quite difficult to get track of. I think you can only find like second-hand copies of the DVD out there, and I don't think it's available on any streaming at the minute. So, but there's ways and means. But if you can find it, definitely worth checking out. It is hilarious.
I've never heard of that one before, so I'm quite intrigued by that.
The cast list on it as well is absolutely superb. I mean, George Harrison actually voices an interviewer on it, he's in with the Jokers. Obviously, George Harrison was quite involved. He was a production company, Handmade Films, he was involved with, who went on to do help fund some of the Monty Python films with Neil and I. He plays like a voice role within it, but Bill Murray's in it. Dan Aykroyd is in it. It's a really sort of mixed cast, so well worth watching. I think it was 1978 it was made.
So early folk, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
Jim Belushi in as well. So yeah, well worth checking out. But yeah, difficult to find because you just don't see it on TV.
And, it's quite surprising given the cast.
Yeah. I don't know if it's to do with like a rights thing or something like that, perhaps. Fantastic, well worth watching, but a little undiscovered gem.
Very nice.
But I believe you've got a list as well, Scott, although you've confessed to not having the longest list, but you've got one to go through.
Thank you. So as I alluded to, I don't actually have a mockumentaries list because I haven't seen 5 mockumentaries, which is embarrassing.
No, but it's not embarrassing because you've basically brought everything together and everything's consistent now. So stop apologising.
Okay. The universe is aligned again. Now, some of these films haven't seen in a while. I think these are probably the only 5 found footage films I've seen, to be fair. At number 5, I've got The Bay, which I think you talked about a few episodes ago, Simon.
I did, yeah. It's on Shudder. Yeah. It's pretty good. Little ecological horror found footage movie.
I saw that ages ago, mine, so I can't really say anything about it.
I can confirm it's good.
Number 4, the already mentioned Cloverfield. Number 3, the already mentioned The Blair Witch Project. Number 2, Troll Hunter, the Norwegian film, which one of our listeners mentioned in their correspondence. That's on Netflix, so something which most people will be able to get hold of. It's about some other film students who...
I think so, yeah.
Who go to the Norwegian... north to the remote forests to investigate reports of a Bigfoot and this fella who is seemingly tracking them. It's a very spooky film, works as a horror very well.
And a comedy.
Yeah.
It's quite funny as well.
Yeah, it is quite funny, yeah.
Good fart jokes and stuff, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So it does quite spooky, as I say, but as Simon says, it is quite funny in a way. So there's a lot to get from that. Number 1, again, I haven't seen it in years, but it's District 9. Are we in agreement this could be considered a found footage film?
Yeah. Well, at least the first act is, and the ending is as well. And I think it's the rest of it's just kind of like a fill-in-the-blanks action movie, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, there was some found footage in District 9, but it's there just because it's a great film anyway. So
I'll allow it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been allowed, so it's going to stay. But there you go, folks. Those are my top 5 found footage films, aka the only 5 found footage films I've seen.
Well, fair play to you, Scott. Thanks for contributing that. Shall I get on and do my...
Yes, get on with yours swiftly.
Well, actually, before I do, I just wanted to sort of outline some stuff that's on the streaming services that I cover. So that's going to be Arrow Player, Now TV, Mubi, and BFI Player. So, surprisingly enough, Arrow Player only have 1 found footage movie on there. It's a young service, so, you know, there's more room to expand, but it is Rec, which, you know, we've talked about a bit. They just released that physically recently. Rec 2 can be found on Shudder. Our old friend, and Rec 3, I think, is only available physically or available to rent. So, you know, that was a bit of a damn squib, wasn't it? Even more surprising, though, than Arrow Player's lack of found footage movies and mockumentaries is Mubi's unexpected abundance of them. I've mentioned all these movies in some capacity on here before, but they have two documentary fiction hybrids by Ben Rivers in the form of Krabby 2562 and the excellent Spelt the Ward Off the Darkness. Following their pick of Edward Monk last month, they are streaming one of Peter Watkins' previous works in Punishment Park, and they're still streaming Perfumed Nightmare, which is Kidlat Tahimik's adorable travelogue slash mockumentary hybrid from the Philippines. That one is a very, very strong recommendation from me. Over on BFI Player, you've got Peter Greenaway's epic debut feature, The Falls, which follows the lives of 92 people who were fictionally affected by a bizarre and unexplained phenomenon called the VUE, which is the Violent Unexplained Event. With it being a Peter Greenaway film, it's very dry, it's very surreal, and it's absolutely obsessed with ornithology. So if you like birds, and if you like some deadpan weirdness, and you also have 3 spare hours, then give The Falls a go. On Now TV, we have the aforementioned What We Do in the Shadows spin-off called Wellington Paranormal. This is the first of the spin-offs in the What We Do in the Shadows universe, and it follows the escapades of Officers Minogue and O'Leary, so the two coppers who drop round to the house and then get kind of vampire mind-tricked into not seeing a corpse in the basement. I always feel like this one gets forgotten about since HBO's What We Do in the Shadows spin-off is still in the limelight since, but this one is still set in New Zealand and it has that Kiwi sense of humour, so what's not to love there? I do have a bunch of honourable mentions that didn't make the cut into my top 5, but since you've had 2 lists, Graham, I think I'm allowed this. I think I realised making this list that mockumentaries are one of my favourite subgenres because there are a surprisingly lot of different ways that you can make one. One that I always feel gets forgotten about but is one of the funniest films of the past decade is Pop Star Never Stop Never Stopping, creatively overseen by the fellas in The Lonely Island. So Andy Samberg is Connor for real, a Justin Bieber-esque pop icon who's blossomed into something garish and horrible after his humble origins in a Backstreet Boys-like band with his Lonely Island bandmates Yoma Taconi and Akiva Schaffer. It's basically Spinal Tap updated for terrible noughties and tens music, but you know, laugh for laugh, it's a similar gag ratio, which is obviously a very impressive feat indeed. I was also thinking about I'm Still Here, which is the Casey Affleck directed mock doc about Joaquin Phoenix going off the rails and becoming a rapper. That actually had me fooled at the time when they were doing publicity for it. I actually thought that Joaquin Phoenix had quit acting and was going on to become a rapper. The film itself, once that came out, kind of just added a whole another dimension to Phoenix's very method grandstand. It's a very sad film as well, and it gives more insight into Phoenix's psyche than you'd think, given the obvious grandstand. And so I think this film in particular works as a good bridge between his earlier work and stuff like Gladiator, you know, Buffalo Soldier, stuff like that, into the more risky, dedicated work that he's done recently in stuff like Joker and The Master and whatnot. I also think there's a lot to be said for hyper-realistic mockumentaries that kind of push the envelope in terms of what you're being shown. One perfect example of this is Man Bites Dog, which is a 1992 Belgian movie about a camera crew who follow around a serial killer committing crimes and murders, and in effect they become his assistants during his nefarious deeds. It's got one of the all-time great posters. It's an illustration of the main villain just pumping around into a pram and a bloody dummy flying out of it. So from that ridiculous image, you can tell it's going to be a very blackly comic film. But that being said, there are images in it that I won't forget anytime soon. So I guess approach that one with caution. Creep, which is on Netflix, fulfills a similar function. That's much more of a sort of found footage cringe comedy than anything else. Definitely worth it for Mark Duplass's unhinged performance alone. Keeping in with found footage horror, I'd say that VHS 2 is a very good example of a found footage anthology. VHS 1 isn't very good. VHS Viral is actively appalling. But in the middle, VHS 2 is very, very fun. It's got a great short in it by Gareth Evans of The Raid fame. And he was working alongside Timo Chajanto, the director of The Night Comes For Us. This short is called Safe Haven, and without spoiling anything, it is straight up one of the best movies about a cult ever made. I'd also like to make an argument for a film that isn't really a mockumentary, but I think it might be. It's called Hard to Be a God, It's a 3-hour-long wallow in medieval filth from the writers behind Stalker, the Strugazzi brothers, about the human race coming across a planet called Arcanar, which is basically Earth, if Earth didn't have a Renaissance era to bring itself out of the medieval period. Whether it's actually a mockumentary or not is kind of up for debate, because the camera itself moves around like it is in an art movie, which it obviously is, but the characters actually interact with the camera and look at the camera like they're in a documentary. I think it might be this sort of like weird, arty expression of a cultural document that the scientists are going to send back to Earth. But honestly, you know, keeping track of anything in that film is just nigh on impossible. So let's not say that it is or isn't. Finally, I'd like to give a quick shout out to one of the very worst films ever made, called Chained Girls. Now, BINWR, the streaming service run by Nicholas Winding Refn, have been responsible for restoring this. And it's basically a homophobic propaganda documentary about the inner lives of lesbians in New York in the 1960s that basically portrays them as a predatory gang of lowlives who go out of their way to ruin the livelihoods and the innocence of straight women to their own evil ends. It's completely baffling. It shows the nasty truth about homophobia better than any movies that are active criticisms of homophobia, because this is just like completely uncensored homophobia, of course. It's the real thing. It's a mockumentary in form, but I think it's a documentary as well about the craziness of the people making it. So, like I say, a really harmful document of the time, but a very interesting use of the mockumentary, I guess. So, there's just a few examples of stuff that didn't make the cut. Are you sufficiently excited for the top five now, gentlemen?
Go on.
Right. Right, so, okay, at number five, it's a new film, but it's also a very old one at the same time. You might remember when Netflix commissioned Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind to be edited and released after mostly being shot in the early 70s, but that ultimately fell through originally after numerous funding disputes. Now, the footage that Orson Welles did complete, that was circulated for years around Hollywood. Its unique style at the time was said to be a big influence on Oliver Stone, who used that sort of fast, snappy pop mentality that he kind of refined in movies like JFK and Natural Born Killers and The Doors as well. So that was a real milestone in Hollywood aesthetics. Looking at the film, completed on Netflix now, you can absolutely see the DNA in this mockumentary hybrid about an aging filmmaker who's played by John Huston hosting a screening party for his unfinished film. From that, I think we can read a lot about what Orson Welles' possible intentions for this project were. But since he's not actually around to confirm whether he did or didn't intend to finish the film, I guess we'll never know. It is quite impressive, though, as it stands. It is very good to see Welles basically deconstructing this whole sort of narrative structure that he set up very well with, you know, that little movie Citizen Kane a few decades beforehand. And also, fun fact about The Other Side of the Wind, it's also the longest production history of any film ever made. So from the beginning of filming in 1970 to the eventual editing and Netflix release in 2018, The Other Side of the Wind took 48 years to make. Quite something. Wow. Richard Linklater, eat your heart out. Number four on my list is a double feature of a television miniseries and a film. I introduced you guys to the weird and wonderful world of On Cinema at the Cinema in episode 19, and two facets of that expansive universe are some of the best examples of a mockumentary ever made. It starts off with The Trial, otherwise known as The Trial of Tim Heidecker, which is a 6-episode long real-time construction of a fictional legal trial where Tim Heidecker, playing a huckster version of himself involved in the EDM scene, is faced with 20 counts of second-degree felony murder after the deaths of 20 people at a music festival that he threw in San Bernardino County. To the uninitiated, this will of course not make any sense, but if you've watched On Cinema and all of the related pieces of media surrounding that, then I guarantee you this will be pretty much the funniest thing that you've ever seen in your life. Mr. America acts as a mockumentary sequel to The Trial. It's about Tim trying to run for district attorney in the same area after the events of The Trial. And that is a more traditional, almost Borat-esque exploration of the mockumentary genre. Nonetheless, though, it's never silly It's not quite as ridiculous as something like Borat, and it stays true to the characters and the world. So for those looking to delve in to the world of On Cinema at the cinema, then you have these two gems to look forward to towards the end of your journey. Number three on my list is a mockumentary/documentary hybrid about Nick Cave, of Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds fame. It's 20,000 Days on Earth, which is a semi-scripted, semi-real documentation of his creative process and production of his 2013 album, Push the Sky Away. Even if you're not a fan of Nick Cave's music, there is so much to explore here. It's one of the best films about the creative process that I've ever seen. So actually, at the time that I initially watched it, I had very little grasp of what he was all about. So I'd say this is accessible to anyone, really. Number two on my list is a film that I mentioned in episode 27. Sorry, we filmed two episodes tonight, so I'm a bit disorientated. So I've mentioned this in episode 27. It's Peter Watkins' The War Game. It's a hypothetical mockumentary about what 1960s Britain would look like if it was attacked with nuclear weapons. At the time, of course, this was a very real possibility, so you can only imagine what the controversy would have been like surrounding this when it was pulled from scheduling back in 1965. It toured film festivals and it gained buzz and notoriety from there, but it only actually eventually got broadcast in its original home on the BBC in 1985. I think that in itself is a testament to the power of this mockumentary, and how afraid people were of what it was saying about the global climate at the time. It's a very terrifying film, a very, very convincing document of what could be if the human race isn't careful about how it treats its fellow man. My number one on the list of greatest found footage and mockumentary movies is a very, very disturbing and strange, unclassifiable experiment that I can't really believe exists. In its original form, the director thought it would be a better idea to make the film, dub it onto VHS tapes, and then just throw it into people's gardens, unexplained, in the local area. But the producer basically convinced him that, you know, that was a dumb idea, and he should probably let it screen at film festivals and actually make some money off it. It is, of course, Harmony Korine's absurd document of evil, Trash Humpers. It's filmed on a scratchy VHS camera, and it basically follows three actors in grotesque old person makeup, basically think Jackass, you know, who go around Nashville, Tennessee at night committing acts of vandalism and, yes, as the title would suggest, grinding against pieces of garbage. There is no plot. There's just a collection of surreal episodes where our subjects basically interact with this group of borderline supernatural weirdos against this very twisted backdrop of Americana. It's a wonder it's actually even a thing, let alone actually kind of good. It's very hypnotic, very terrifying as well. Everyone seems to hate it. I feel like I have to defend this one because it is literally one of the best found footage films that I've ever seen. It's an experiment for sure, but I think it's also a very worthwhile horror movie at the same time. So if anybody wants to lend that one and kind of try and sit through it or have a beer with me over that, let's do that sometime.
Sounds good. Fantastic.
No, it's not. It's really not, but it is. No, you know?
But it is, but it's not. But yeah. That's pretty comprehensive, I've got to say. I think we've covered probably
the major ones.
Major ones and not so major ones as well there. So hope you listeners have got some food for thought there, for something to look out for. We certainly have from your suggestions and what we've come up amongst ourselves. So, yeah, it's great to do this. So we look forward to getting the next episode out soon, but we will always try to feature your comments as well. So any suggestions for anything you'd like us to feature, please let us know. We're available on our social media channels, on @podcasters on Twitter, Instagram, Invasion of the Podcasters, Facebook, Invasion of the Podcasters. We have a Gmail account of podcasters.uk@gmail.com, and we have a Letterboxd account where Simon is updating with the movies that we cover
every now and again.
Letterboxd.com/podcasters. But for this episode, this special episode I should say, thank you very much for all your contributions, and we look forward to getting a regular episode back out soon. And until next time, from Graham, thank you and goodbye.
From Scott, thank you and goodbye.
from Simon. Thank you and good night. Because it is 10:05 right now. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, let's pack this up.
Night, night, guys.